evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll look at the anti-foreigner violence in South Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Vincent, welcome back to the show once again.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. We also have a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He joins us from Durban, South Africa, as usual. He is an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, I'm happy to have both of you tonight.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
You're welcome. Now, as I said, tonight we're looking at the anti-foreigner violence in South Africa. Why don't we begin with you, Suleiman, in Durban? Is it as scary there as we are getting it here?
I think it has calmed down. The situation is under control. Of course, it is so frightening because it touches lives. It is not the first time. It has become almost a culture towards the end of the year that such horrible and horrifying images are screened on the TVs and in the media everywhere. But at the moment, from Sunday to now, at least in the country, by today, the situation has come down. The Queen, we have been swearing in a new mayor. Life is coming back to normal. Johannesburg also is under control. It is going back to normal. So far, so good.
I see. Vincent, it's not the first time, as Suleiman has just alluded to, there was such a violence in 2008. Again, another round of violence in 2015. What's the problem?
Personally, I think fundamentally we have to consider the economic state of the people. Many times when people suffer from extreme poverty, they tend to look around them and find something to blame, someone to blame, even when that person really has nothing to do with them. Mm-hmm. And you have to, if you look closely at what's going on in South Africa, you'll notice that all this violence is actually concentrated in the extremely poor neighborhoods. You're not seeing these things in Sandton in Johannesburg, where my cousin, who's a doctor, lives, which is a wealthy neighborhood. You're not seeing this in other upscale neighborhoods, whether it's in Cape Town or Durban. This is almost exclusively in the poor neighborhood. So what the underlying issue here is poverty. And then there's a political involvement here where some people politicize poverty and so as not to take charge of the situation, not to be accountable. They will direct the blame for the people's suffering to some foreigners, some external people who are taking your jobs, who are, taking what should be yours. So you have to look at it from that point of view to kind of understand what's going on in South Africa.
I see. Suleiman, I think you see it the same way, but true, it has been politicized. Some leaders like Mulema are saying, the people should vent their anger against the elite, maybe including the white wealthy guys. That can't be a solution, you know?
Actually, I might say that this time, and most of the time, as Vincent has said, there is a political element in the whole saga. Much as there had been some looting in some parts of Johannesburg earlier on, but I think the government or the political actions which were taken in the interim contributed to the situation getting worse. Within a few weeks, just a period before the outbreak, there was an operation down Johannesburg for counterfeit goods. It was not wrong, but it was haphazardly carried out because foreign-owned shops were raided by the police in broad daylight, and the goods were taken anyhow. They were just bundled into police vans. The goods were being thrown all over. There was no systematic process which was followed, as if they were raiding the vulnerable people, showing the citizens that anything can be done to them. That was not helped by the mayor of Johannesburg himself. Within the period, sometime after before the raid, he had publicly said that he was against the domination of businesses down Johannesburg by foreigners. So there was some careless talk and some careless actions by officials which might have escalated the situation. The way it was last time, you remember, it was the king of the Zulus who had made also statements which may have inflamed the situation. I believe this time these two operations, the role of the mayor and the operation itself, might also have contributed to the situation going out of hand. So as Vincent has said, some political element in it contributed to the situation, contributed to the giving room to the desperate people, as I said, the poor of the poorest, taking advantage, taking the foreigners as scapegoat to go and raid them and get something for themselves.
Yeah, but what's interesting, I get your point, Suleiman, but other people are pointing out the people didn't vent their anger against all foreigners. It's against Africans, full Africans.
I want to chip in there before maybe we let Suleiman say that. Many people have been saying that. Well, you don't attack white people. You don't attack other races. That is the reason why. I mean, I have to emphasize this. It happens in poor neighborhoods. In most of these poor neighborhoods, there are no white people who are living there.
They're attacked.
There are no, no Asians who are living there. Mostly it's fellow Africans, because that's where they generally gravitate to. They go and live in these neighborhoods which are inhabited by fellow Africans. You have to realize that the xenophobic attacks are not necessarily affecting Africans who are involved in, for example, certain professions or very high kind of high-end kind of businesses. This is usually businesses in the neighborhoods where there is so much visibility of the Africans there, of Africans of other countries. So while somebody may, you know, if you ask somebody, someone could say you could actually blame the problems of South Africa to the white people who perpetuated apartheid, that there are these white foreigners or other races who come in and are benefiting from the economy of this country, including people like the Guptas, but they don't live in the neighborhoods where the poor Africans live. The poor Africans who are disgruntled by the system for their poverty take it out on the ones they can see. The people they can see close to them are fellow Africans who live amongst them. And that is how I've seen it over the years, because you do not, in fact, most of them don't even know what's happening elsewhere. They only see what's happening on their streets. They know who owns this little kiosk, who owns that little shop, who is marrying our girl around the corner, but also who is involved even in some of the other issues, including crime, in the neighborhoods in which they live. They are seeing fellow Africans who live amongst them.
I see. Suleiman, your take on that. And secondly, why prominently Nigerians?
Actually, there is some misinformation there internationally. Number one, the attack is not only on Africans. The attack down Johannesburg was indiscriminate. That is why the government's view is that it was criminal. They just indiscriminately attacked streets. Of course, the streets had foreigners, But they not only attack foreign shops only. Shops like ShopRite and other pep stores, some shops belonging to South Africans, even some small businesses belonging to South Africans, but within the area, they were all indiscriminately routed. Not only South African shop, the Pakistanians, the Bangladeshis, the Asians, many of them own big shops, and many of them are affected.
But
even in the poor area, apart from the poor areas, of course, in the poor areas, it is usually Ethiopians, Somalis, and the Pakistanis and the Asians. So you find that it was not just Nigerians, it was not just the Africans, it was just foreign-owned business and any businesses within the Johannesburg area.
So I think that brings out two issues here. There is the issue of people taking advantage of the situation to engage in criminal activities, because looters have no discrimination. They loot from their own brother and their own uncles. And then there is the other issue of xenophobia, because I think people have to be very careful. There is a difference between usual crime, which is rampant in South Africa, and there is also the issue of xenophobia, where you incite people to view a particular group of people as being the reason for their problem. Therefore, it is very targeted, where they're looking at you, not necessarily as a business person, but they're looking at you as a foreigner from another part of the world who has come to take something. They somehow, at the back of their mind, believe that your being there has deprived them of something, and therefore they come and attack you. Now, that's one situation, but there is also crime. There is criminality, and as actually the government of South Africa has observed, there are some incidents which are purely criminal. And we all know that whenever there is chaos in any part of the world, especially in any city, looters go out and wreak havoc. And looters sometimes have no other agenda other than taking whatever
now,
they can find.
But to both of you briefly, is it more to the crime element or to being against the Africans in South Africa? What do you think briefly, Vincent?
Well, personally, I think it's a kind of a mix of things.
Mm.
There's a crime.
Yeah.
Because why I'm asking this is the international media has tended to cover it as xenophobic, that the South Africans don't want other Africans. Some people are saying, well, maybe it's crime, it's poverty, it's need. Somebody has lacked something, sees a shop packed full of stuff. He wants that stuff, steal that stuff, and it's purely criminal.
Yeah, I mean, let me give you an example. Some years back when we used to have too many Asians or Kenyans of Asian extraction who owned shops in downtown Nairobi.
Mm.
Most of the shops were owned by them.
Yeah.
Whenever we had a political situation and people were demonstrating, people break those shops and steal.
Yes.
And it did not matter who owned the shop, but it so happened that majority of them were Asians.
Yes.
So somebody looking at it from a different perspective would have said, Kenyans are attacking Asians.
Mm.
They're xenophobic. Mm. No. Those Kenyans were just attacking shops and looting at that time because of the situation at the moment. That's how I see it. People have to isolate xenophobia from just crime.
Mm-hmm. Suleiman, briefly.
Briefly, the criminal element is bigger than the xenophobic aspect.
Uh-huh.
The xenophobic aspect is there. It has always been there. It always exists. And it is not only even unique to South Africa. Whenever situations are hard, like they are, the fact of the matter is that the economy is biting, there is a lot of unemployment, and the scapegoat is foreigners. That one, their sound, they are low voices moving around. We cannot remove them. But as far as this outbreak is concerned, the extent at which it has gone, the banning of shops, the shops are South African shops. They are owned by South African citizens.
Mm-hmm.
These are properties which are owned by indigenous people. They are not owned by foreigners. But they went ahead and burnt them.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you that the criminal element is higher than the xenophobic element. There are some criminal element. That is why some people feel there is a third force. There is an unorganized group which just went on rampage, which just wanted to take advantage of the situation because they had seen the police had raided the foreign shop, taking away counterfeit goods. Maybe they just wanted to take advantage of the situation also.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing the anti-foreign violence in South Africa. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Makori, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Now, gentlemen, that's the basis of what's going on there. But the repercussions this time have been different. Businesses owned by South Africans in Nigeria were attacked in Abuja and elsewhere. Now Nigeria is saying it's going to ferry, it has sent planes to take back its citizens.
Yes.
South Africa today, or Thursday, it closed its diplomatic missions in the Nigerian cities of Abuja and Lagos. And protesters later on Thursday also smashed windows of South African consulate in DR Congo, the second largest city of Lubumbashi. Now, this seems to have gone out of hand, Vincent.
Yeah, yes. You know what happens, as usual, people will react. And, of course, there's some level of compassion, especially when you feel like your countrymen are being mistreated elsewhere. Of course, there's also hyperbole. If you look at the social media especially, there's a lot of exaggeration.
Yes,
I saw one Nigerian guy saying, we have just received information that 500 Nigerians have been murdered in South Africa, which is not true. And sometimes you can see videos being circulated. Some are from the past.
Yeah,
some are actually videos of thieves being lynched, you know, because we have a tradition of lynching thieves.
Yeah.
And so because of the misinformation and exaggeration, of course, people have given to reacting. And how they react is they take out, they take it out on any representation of something from that country. Now, MTN, ShopRite, those are privately owned companies. They have nothing to do with the people who are attacking those foreigners or anybody in South Africa. Those are just independent private companies. And when you look at their establishment in Nigeria, there's probably one or two or three South African managers. Those shops, those stores actually employ Nigerians in that country. So when you attack them and break them and have them have ShopRite closed down in Nigeria, you've denied so many Nigerians jobs for whatever time it will take. Of course, the political level, yes, governments have to show that they have concern. Therefore, they will close embassies. They will recall the ambassadors. It's a normal process that will be resolved after a short time. I guarantee you in another 2 weeks, those ambassadors will go back to their stations. The diplomats will talk. The governments will be talking to each other. But when it comes to the issues on the ground, like the attacks on businesses and the pelting stones at the embassies, those are just it's a reaction. It's a reaction. Tempers are there. Frustration is there. Compassion is there. But it will cool off. But one interesting thing, and I asked one of our senior reporters to look into that, there is this offer by a Nigerian airline executive to take planes to South Africa to bring Nigerians back to Nigeria. I am curious, and I'm waiting for that part of the story. How many Nigerians are willing to board planes and return to Nigeria? That's the story I told our reporter. That's the part of the story I want. Not that some guy is promising to bring Nigeria. I just want to see those plane loads of Nigerians coming back to Nigeria and celebrating upon arriving on the ground. That will be very, very interesting to observe.
Suleiman, I'm sure the South Africans must be surprised at some of the reaction by other countries.
They are, and I think the most unfortunate part of it is that as a continent, we are failing, the continent is failing to see, to realize how much they are contributing to the confusion in South Africa. Even South Africa itself, the leadership is failing to understand that the overlying problem is Africa. The problems of Africa have come now to bear on them. Of course, one of the salient issues as far as South Africa is concerned is one. So long as you have got a province of Zimbabwe, which is now almost a part another province of South Africa. Nothing can go right in South Africa. And here, South Africa is coming to pay back, is getting the payback. In 2005, after Mugabe had been defeated, President Kama of Botswana stood and called on President Mugabe to stand down, supported by Mwanawasa, that he had lost the election, let him stand down, let there be a new dispensation. It was South Africa which stood in, proposed a government of national reconciliation. After that, Mugabe became firm again. Zimbabwe has never settled. Regardless of Mugabe going away, the situation in Zimbabwe has not settled. There is no change. It is only change of guards. As you are very aware, the sanctions are still going on. The economy is biting. So long as the economy is biting, the influx from Zimbabwe is continuing to pour into South Africa. The problem of South Africa is not Nigerians, but it's basically Zimbabweans and a few others. Ethiopia also has poured in, and then there is also the Asians who are pouring in big numbers. But to begin with, unless South Africa takes an initiative to have Zimbabwe solved, xenophobic attacks will continue, pressures will continue, there will be confusion there. Imagine, Douglas, a country like Tanzania is trying to repatriate Burundians to go back to Burundi. What about South Africa? It only has about 150,000. You can't imagine how many Zimbabweans are in South Africa. So much as we are blaming South Africans, yes, it is not good to take it the way it is taking it, but government needs to be aware. Government needs to sit on Zimbabwe to sort out their problem. Government of South Africa needs to sit on Ethiopia to sit on their problem, Uganda, DRC, and so on. We should not blame South Africa on their own, but we also have to look at the leadership which pushes these young people into South Africa.
I see. And I want to say that I see the problem in South Africa in another angle, in another way too. Xenophobia is not necessarily the biggest issue in South Africa. South Africa has a big problem. Mm. We have to, for example, take note of the fact that South Africa's murder rate is higher than most countries around the world. There are about 57 murders every day in South Africa. There are women being raped and murdered every day. We saw a protest interrupting the World Economic Forum in Cape Town because women are out in numbers saying we are tired of being raped and murdered. So South Africa has a problem of security. So if you live in South Africa, you stand a higher chance of being murdered in a crime-related incident than being killed out of a xenophobic attack.
Yes.
If you are a woman in South Africa, whether you're South African or you're a foreigner, you're likely to be raped and murdered, not because of a xenophobic attack, but because of the rampant crime in South Africa. South Africa, therefore, suffers from an inability to bring a sense of security to the country, to rein in on gang violence, to restore a sense of security on the streets anywhere in South Africa. I've been in South Africa and everybody's concerned about security every day. So while we are talking about how many people have been murdered during xenophobic attacks, look at how many people are murdered every day. And these are South Africans. They're not necessarily foreigners. In what? In crime-related things. In gang violence in the flats of Cape Town or gangs in Soweto. So it, to me, it almost looks like South Africa needs a lot of help. The leadership there needs to sit down and perhaps consult everybody around the continent and also perhaps look for other, external bodies to say, how can we stem the violence in South Africa that affects not only foreigners, but even South Africans themselves every day.
Is it true then, therefore, to say that maybe the hangover of apartheid still there, because what causes that violence primarily is poverty and lack of opportunity for a class of people.
Actually, a lot of wealth. What the government has not appreciated is another problem. Like you in U.S., where the president is at war with China, the leadership in Africa and in South Africa, also broad on the continent, they have not realized how much China is affecting the economy. Before the influx of Chinese in South Africa, or before immediately after apartheid, South Africa had well-established self-sustaining industries. South Africa could manufacture almost everything you can think of. But with the coming in of Chinese goods, many factories have closed. The unemployment which South Africa is facing today, it is partly due to the problem of China as you know it. A lot of counterfeit goods, the manufacturing industry is under pressure, the textile industry is under pressure. There is no industry which is not under pressure. Can you imagine even local production of chicken, the imports, they have led many poultry farms to be closed. So many people are unemployed because of the influx of counterfeit goods, because of Chinese goods. So unless there is a particular attention to the economy, especially as far as the foreign cheap goods are concerned, whereby government needs to resuscitate the local industries and then create employment, if we are moving at this trajectory which we are moving on, there is going to be more and more violence, as Vincent has indicated.
Vincent, 30 seconds, yes. 30 seconds left. He has just mentioned at least one way to solve this issue. But then how do you see this after this wave? Do you think the government there will figure out something?
It will be a challenge, but I think the government needs to come out very clear and openly and say, our country is open to other Africans, and just like any other people, to live here as long as you're a law-abiding person, because even South Africans are free to go and live in other countries. We need to not meet out our anger and frustration on foreigners or people who have come to do business in our country.
I see. Well, we shall keep following the situation there, but that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our producer, as usual, is Jackson Mufunganyi, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas, in Washington. Wishing you
what's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
You are listening to Upfront, the Voice of America.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Without my family, I don't think I would have been here today, because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can the AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Liz Palka.